Welcome to the Turnaround Mindset podcast with your hosts, behavioral economist and psychologist Phil Slade, and successful business leader and accountant Adam Smith. In these unprecedented times, decisive and fearless leadership is critical to any business transformation. Each week, our hosts will unpack the tough and intimate questions we all face as professionals, offering no-nonsense business advice to those bold enough to think and act differently. Now, here are your hosts, Phil and Adam.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 12 of the Turnaround Mindset podcast. Today's episode covers a topic that all leaders face regularly in their chosen profession. Being a leader in any business is hard work, especially when a problem or crisis comes about. Teams look to their leaders as someone they can count on to inspire, to drive results, and communicate the vision of the business. As a leader, it's important to remain cool, calm, and collected, and approach all challenges with enthusiasm and diplomacy. However, the truth is, we're all human beings, and each of us as leaders has to manage our own stress levels, and sometimes, I have to admit, it can be overwhelming. Managing responsibilities both personally and professionally, as well as maintaining a high level of intensity, can significantly increase levels of anxiety and cortisol in the body. Left unchecked and not managed correctly, high anxiety levels will start to impact decision-making and effectiveness and zap our energy levels, causing performance paralysis. So today, Phil, we're going to be talking about how do I manage my fears and anxieties as a leader?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting topic. And look, everyone to some degree experiences anxiety and fear. And we have to destigmatize what anxiety and fear is. You need a little bit of fear and anxiety to exist and work in the world around you. A little bit of anxiety and fear means that you're diligent and you're vigilant to the things that are around you, and you're not just overlooking things. It's about when these things get out of hand and out of control and become overwhelming. You know, there's an optimal working amount of anxiety and fear that actually motivates us. I mean, last year with COVID, though, it was a really stressful time for everyone, and leaders and managers all over the world really need to change the way that they were doing things, and change is stressful. Trying to stay calm, reassuring the team that everything's okay in the crisis whilst everyone else is also still struggling, and trying not to show that sense of terrifiedness, right? that they're actually freaking out themselves, means they're suppressing, and that suppression actually creates more stress and anxiety, right? How can one possibly lead with strength when you're feeling anxious is the question that constantly comes up. The imposter syndrome comes in, all sorts of things start to nibble at the back thoughts. And not to mention that, you know, if you are suppressing and hiding those fears, it tends to manifest somewhere else. It'll leak out somewhere else. So your wife, your kids, someone else is going to bear the brunt of what it is that you're suppressing.
Yep.
So we've said in previous podcasts that, you know, anxiety and stress, you know, can improve performance, like I was saying before, and it is a natural defense mechanism protecting us from harm. And that's a really important thing. That's why we've got anxiety and fear, right? A fellow psychologist, Rollo May, he wrote a great quote in basically referring to modern times. Why do we have anxiety and fear in modern times, you know, when it was made for us when we were cavemen? And he says, we're no longer prey to tigers and mastodons, but to damage to our self-esteem, ostracism by our group, or threat of losing out in a competitive struggle. The form of anxiety has changed, but the experience remains relatively the same. Now, what Rollo was saying here is that even though we don't have the fear of being chased by predators anymore, what chases us is the uncertainty and fear of those people that we care about. Job security, financial security, you know, how secure are we? You know, do I need to wind up my business? Do I need to get the vaccination? You know, is this COVID thing going to wipe us off the face of the planet? You know, these are the things that cause the type of anxieties that unsettle us. You know, these days our worries provoke the same neurological and physical responses as you would get from being chased by a wild animal. I think the good news is that there are many effective ways to help you face and control your fears and anxieties as a leader. We do have a Switch app that you can download for free that's got a whole lot of little switches. And switches is just that way of flicking from that automatic emotional brain to your more rational thought. And that's what happens when you get overwhelmed with fear and anxiety. You start to rely on your automatic processing, which might be fine in your area of expertise. But as soon as you stray out of that expertise, you'll get into real problems and you'll start making poor decisions. And it's often a good way to start to just go, here's a few simple little tricks or tools that you can use. We're not going to go through them in the podcast. You can download the Decider Switch from any app store. It's completely free and it'll just give you some little tools. It's a nice little addition to what we're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. But on today's podcast, not only are we going to talk about the four ways you can manage and overcome fear and anxiety, we are then going to talk about what this means to you as a leader.
I have to say it would have been nice to have known a few more of these tips, Phil, say 15 years ago when I was first starting to lead and manage businesses myself.
I think we were all in that same boat, right?
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. But look, some of the tips we're going to cover off here today come from our own sort of school of hard knocks experiences, Phil, you know, where we could have been better equipped to deal with leadership situations ourselves.
Well, I suppose we really need to define what we mean by stress and anxiety, because stress and anxiety often get confused, and where stress is a more immediate response, anxiety is a little bit more of an emotional state, and that's the way that I try to split them apart. Stress. There is an optimal stress. You actually want quite a bit of stress in your life to perform optimally. You need that bit of stress. You need a bit of time pressure. You need a bit of expectations from others, all those sorts of things. Stress is a response to a threat in a situation. And that threat can be anything. It could be expectations of your kids to be there at sports on Sunday afternoon. You know, it's still seen, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's a response mechanism to a threat in a situation. Anxiety is more the reaction to that stress and fear and what would happen in the future. Stress is a bit immediate. Mm. Anxiety is something that happens in the future. It's like worry. You know, you're anxious about something that's coming down the street. The good news is those leaders who have learned to live with anxiety and have learned to manage it actually process threats differently to most people. They can react faster in the face of danger, and lying awake at night are capable of finding or fathoming solutions in a crisis situation. In a way, you become an expert at managing anxiety. It becomes part of your expertise as a leader, and being able to triage what's important to focus on and what's not important to focus on, and learning that you can put things aside, right? When channeled in the right way, anxiety can motivate leaders and their teams to be more resourceful and creative, right? However, as we spoke before, maintaining that level of intensity or being in a heightened state for a significant period of time is just, it's unsustainable and can actually lead to long-term negative consequences for the body and the mind. As a leader and as a human being, the important thing with fear and anxiety is to learn to be comfortable with uncomfortable feelings. And I think what's really important about that is that rumination leads to often to lack of sleep. Anxiety and rumination, when they're linked together, means that you're on poor sleep, you're not thinking, you're not making good decisions. Over an extended period of time, it just exhausts you, and you can get mental exhaustion, and you're just not at your ultimate state. You're not in your thrive mindset. You're constantly in this, it can throw you into this constantly reactive mindset. And it also means that you start assuming things that are never going to happen. Because it's a future state, you start playing through all of these scenarios, and when something's bad, you start second-guessing those people that are truly you need to trust. Mm. And all of a sudden, you start to not trust people, you know. And as soon as you start to feel that trust quotient diminishing of the very people around you that you need to trust, then there's a problem.
Yeah, look, absolutely. I think for me, what I've come to realize, you know, life doesn't slow down. It continues always to be relentless. There's always stuff going on. Mm. And from my own experience, you know, as a leader, you know, responsibilities increase, you know, with more pressure on delivering bigger projects, you're managing larger teams, you know, family comes along, there's a lot of responsibilities there to manage, you know. And you look, in the past, I chose to push through it, you know, the stress, whatever it took, the fatigue and the fear, you know, which did affect my health, you know, and probably, as you mentioned before, my high effectiveness as a leader. You know, however, when I did manage to have some downtime, what became clear is that I needed to better manage my emotions. Mm-hmm. You know, as you said, what I needed to do was start feeling comfortable being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, at first, you know, this kind of felt quite counterintuitive, playing out my fears and anxiety in my mind. But what I found was is like, you know, once I'd worked out what the worst possible thing that could happen and how I could possibly manage that, after a while, you know, this process allowed me to start to feel comfortable with those uncomfortable feelings. You know, I read a quote recently by Alice Boyce, who wrote The Anxiety Toolkit. And the more you try to control your anxiety, the more it fights back.
Mm-hmm. There's a great, even in therapy sessions when we talk about anxiety, there's an ACT, acceptance commitment therapy, and it's about accepting it. You know, committing to do something, and often what the one of the activities is to recognize that there's anxiety, visualize it. You know, sometimes being spoken as a cartoon character, to sort of trivialize it a little bit, but then you put it in a box. So you understand it's there, you acknowledge that it's there, you put it in a box, and then focus on something else. Yep. You're not trying to deal with it or overanalyze it or do anything with this. Quite a simple process to just put it in the box. And I think that's what, you know, you're not trying to control it. You're just trying to say it's there. It's okay. You know, I might be highly anxious about this thing. Okay, I am. So hold it lightly. It's not about the absence of anxiety. It's not about getting rid of any anxiety. That's not what you're trying to do here, right?
Yep.
And I love that Alice Ball's quote. And it's a really good segue, I think, into what are the top four tips for how we need to overcome and manage fear and anxiety. Mm-hmm. So I suppose it all makes sense that if we've got four tips, we should start with number one.
That's probably a good place to start.
Let's start with number one. Okay, so the first tip, we've kind of spoken about it already. It's acknowledge and accept your fear and anxiety. Mm-hmm. It's that the box, the sitting down. You know, what we're saying is don't move away from your fear and anxiety. Acknowledge what it is and understand what has cause to manifest it right now. Mm. You know, by learning to accept or label it without attachment helps you begin to address and manage it, right? Rebecca Harley of the Harvard Medical School says, you know, the goal is not to magically make things perfect. The goal is to learn to surf the waves of distress successfully. Give yourself credit even if things don't feel all the way better, you know?
I like that.
What we're talking about here is recognize what you're feeling and starting to develop processes around having stronger emotional intelligence. And there's a real key piece in this point, which is about labeling it. Mm-hmm. The more specific you can look at it, so it might be anxiety, but you are feeling heightened anxiety, or you are spinning your wheels about a particular aspect of a situation which is making you anxious. Acknowledge and accept your fear and anxiety.
Yeah. Well, Harvard Business Review, they put together a big ideas series of papers labeled Managing in an Anxious World, where it was determined through extensive research on emotional intelligence that people who understand their own feelings have higher job satisfaction, stronger job performance, and better relationships.
Yeah.
They're more innovative and they can synthesize diverse opinions and lessen conflict. That's profound. It's big.
Well, it's big. And even the Dunedin experiment, right? The entire, you know, over 50 years of following thousands of people, just on 1,000 people, they've realized that the one correlate to success is emotional intelligence, the ability to understand and manage your emotions, which includes anxiety. So this means that, like, that was the only predictor. It wasn't IQ. It wasn't your level of finances of your parents, you know, your socioeconomic status, the culture that you came from, the level of education that you attained, you know, how many books you've written. It's literally the only correlate to success in life was understanding and managing emotions. You'll be more successful as a leader if you can control those emotions, and one of the big ones is anxiety as an emotion.
So number one, we acknowledge. Number two, what we're looking at doing is recognizing what are the physical reactions to fear and anxiety. You know, learning what the telltales are, like, you know, gurgly stomach, whatever it is, you know, sweaty palms, inability to concentrate, It could be someone's name flashing up on your phone. You're like, oh, this person's calling again. Or something much bigger, you know. Whatever it is that sets you off, you've actually got to work out what's the why. Mm. This means identifying, you know, what was the pattern that got you into this situation to begin with, you know. Mm. Was it stress or was it something else that triggered the emotional reaction?
Yeah, and there's two parts to that, right? There's the what is triggering it and there is the why it's triggering you. Mm. So you might see someone's name flash up and all of a sudden you feel that anxiety response. Mm. And you've got to say, well, why am I feeling anxious about this or a situation
like
or
I
a
see
business thing?
Phil right? Slade, why is he calling me on my phone? Oh, that feeling, again. My gurgly stomach again is happening.
But well, whenever you ring, I don't feel anxious at all.
You don't? You don't feel anything, whatever. Do you? It's terrible. Yeah,
no. No, but look, but for those, and I am prone to anxiety, you know, like that is something that I've, over the course of my life, I've had to really manage well. For those who are prone, like myself, to anxiety or fear, a great way to deal with this, and I've done this for years, is just to write down the fears or thoughts as they happen. Mm. Keep a diary next to your bed. Mm. This is where a lot of you want to reclaim your sleep, right? You start ruminating, turn a little light on, write it down, get it out of your head. The key outcome for being sought from this process is a self-awareness of both negative and positive behaviors. I know a former colleague of mine actually kept an anxiety journal where she would not only document when anxiety was triggered, she'd also take the time to test how she was feeling at different points through the day. Putting things down on paper makes it easy to pinpoint patterns and the chain of events that lead up to fear and anxiety bubbling up. But it's not. It also empties your head because what your brain naturally does is if you don't write it down, when you write it down, it's kept somewhere. Your brain says, I can deal with that later. Mm. If you don't write it down, your brain constantly ticks it over because it doesn't want to forget these thoughts and patterns. And in the morning, when you read back on those anxieties, you'll realize often how stupid they are and that you just needed to have some sleep. And your brain would have solved those things overnight anyway, and they're not as big or didn't deserve the anxiety or the fear or the attention that you were giving it at the time. Mm. And that ability to post hoc analyze that anxiety only happens if you can write it down because you won't remember it. Just remember the anxiety.
I know if you get fixated almost on something in your mind and it just grinds and grinds at you and you can lose hours and hours just tossing and turning in bed at night thinking, why am I thinking about this? And I have to admit, I took your advice there on many occasions where you just turn the light on and actually say, what is it I'm thinking about, and actually write it out. Mm. And like you said, once you've actually written it down, it's almost like you've given it, you know, it's exited your mind. Mm-hmm. You know, you can actually breathe again. Yeah. And as soon as it's out, I found that, you know, you could turn the light off and you could actually make peace and actually go back to sleep. But it's a tough one to manage, that one. So, all right, so we've done number two. So on to number three, which is focus on what you can control.
Control the controllables, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So remember, some anxiety is rational and helpful, as you've mentioned, Phil. Mm. However, when you are feeling particularly anxious or fearful, tasks or projects can easily become overwhelming. So one of the ways I've dealt with my anxiety, you know, was listening to the advice of one of my best mates, Greg Minifoss. Big shout out there to Greg, who lives by this philosophy. You know, he essentially says, accept and stop worrying about the things I can't control and only focus on the parts I could control. You know, as a leader, one of the first steps in regaining control was to better organize how I was structuring my time during the day. And what this meant was determining those activities and meetings that were value add, that needed to happen in the day versus those items that I could potentially delay or push to the next day, whatever it might be. So this meant starting every day with a to-do list and taking small steps towards overcoming those tasks that were causing me fear and anxiety in the first place.
Yeah, and there's a great story here. I was first introduced to this concept years ago before I even got into psychology. I was a composer and a music producer, and I had a friend who was riding push bikes across Africa. And this is the time where some of the they were trying to raise money for a charity, breaking the cycle of poverty, and so break the cycle riding across Africa, right? And they had a sports psychologist because it's quite a big feat, as you can imagine. And she really hammered into them because the spouses and even they were quite anxious about going through some of these African nations that at the time were war-torn. They couldn't speak the language. You know, they were getting quite anxious. And she just kept really ramming home this idea of what are the controllables. You can control the path that you're riding, and you control your immediate circumstances to make sure that you don't put yourself in the path of something that's dangerous, you mm-hmm. know. And just by focusing on those things that they can control, focus their energy, it didn't lessen the danger, but it increased their confidence. It released their cognitive capacity that was otherwise being drained by anxiety mm-hmm. to be able to focus on the task at hand and solve the problems as they came up. And they had problems. You know, bikes fell apart, wheels fell off, all sorts of things happened across the country. And, you know, there's not exactly a lot of bike shops across some of these places, right? So they had to problem solve, but they were able to deal with their anxiety, which allowed their brain to be at full capacity when they were, you know, exhausted and tired and riding across.
I suppose what you're saying is here, Phil, is no matter how big and complex the beast, breaking things down into bite-sized chunks, you know, it's a lot easier mm-hmm. way than trying to swallow the whole elephant, you know. Mm. It's a better way to reduce fear and anxiety mm. rather than trying to swallow, as I said, the whole elephant.
No, it's the smaller bits make it bring it into your field of vision and bring to your immediate sense of control. These are things that you can do right now that make a difference, right? Mm-hmm. That's not too far out into the future. But speaking of things you can do to control your fear and anxiety, number four is more focused on those situations that you can't control.
We're at number four already. Wow.
We are. We're at number four already. And where there are things that are attacking you where you don't have a lot of control over, this is where mindfulness really comes into play. You know, mindfulness is a simple, logical and effective process that you can use when you or your teams really just need to calm the farm. It's calm the farm, right? Reboot. You need to take a fresh, positive perspective on things. Mindfulness, what it does is it really focuses your attention on the immediate, on the here and now, things inside your body, in the environment. It involves breathing methods, guided imagery, and other practices to relax the body. And they don't have to be all these new age things, right? There's little tricks like box breathing. Again, you can find that in the Switch app. You go for a mindful walk, and a mindful walk is walking through the botanical gardens or nature and just being very particular about seeing and hearing things. What's that sound that you hear? What's that smell? Mm. What are you looking at? Look at the way that different light captures something. You know, take a camera, so it forces you to focus on what's immediately around you and the beauty that's around you. That's a mindful walk. Mm. And it's a way of just reorienting yourself to the here and now and not worrying about things that you can't control.
For me, sort of slowing down the monkey chatter, so to speak, mm-hmm. in the mind. For me, meditation, you know, over the years has been my go-to just to help reboot, quiet the mind and collect my thoughts. Yeah, and I think the secret, you know, has been to focus on my breathing, as you mentioned, the box breathing thing. You know, but breathing myself calm. You know, have you ever heard that before? Breathing myself calm, so to speak. You know, deep breaths in and out, helping to slow down things in my mind. You know, another thing I've done in overcoming those overwhelming situations, as you were talking about, is to try to disconnect from the situation completely and focus my attention on doing something good for someone else. You know, whether that be helping out a friend I haven't spoken to in a while, helping out a family member or a colleague. You know, other things like performing a generous act, you know, expecting nothing in return. It does incredible things in the mind just to get me out of my own headspace completely and to come away feeling pretty positive about things.
Yeah, because what that does, it's both of those, the mindfulness and the gratefulness and the giving, takes your attention away from the things that are causing, the triggers that are causing anxiety, and focuses things on things that are important: you, your health, your body, your immediate surroundings, the people that are around you, your social circle. This is what is actually important in life. So finally, if anxiety is persistent and hampering your days, you might consider consulting a therapist or mental health professional. Talking to somebody trained in helping others manage anxiety may give you additional coping mechanisms to just address debilitating symptoms affecting your work. And I think That's when it becomes debilitating or it's stopping you doing something that you normally would otherwise be able to do. That's actually what when it becomes, you know, a sort of a cognitive issue. Mm-hmm. And that's how we often triage if you have anxiety as a problem, if the anxiety is stopping you doing something.
Yep. Okay, so we've talked about our four tips on how to manage fear and anxiety. But what are some of the other considerations, Phil, that we need to keep in mind as a leader? You know, primarily, what else can we do as leaders to mitigate our own fears and anxieties?
Yeah, look, I think first and foremost is to make sure as a leader that you focus on your capabilities and strengths.
Mm-hmm.
Most anxiety and fear comes about by focusing too much on your insecurities or the things that you can't see, right? Other people's intentions, market forces that may or may not come your way. You know, once you have determined where your weaknesses are, you can actually take steps toward finding capability that will protect your blind spots. So it's not about being ignorant of those blind spots, but it's making sure that you're mitigating and managing them, that they're not controlling you. Mm. You know, you've got to make sure that its tail's not wagging the dog, make sure you're wagging the tail. Mm.
Look, it can be a difficult thing as a leader and a business owner for that matter, you know, just to actually loosen your grip on things, you know, hand the reins over to someone.
Mm.
You know, many successful leaders react to anxiety by actually working harder, you know, holding themselves and others to this impossibly high standard or just trying to control things that are just beyond their power.
Mm. Micromanagement comes to mind often when people are feeling really anxious.
Agreed.
You know, I mean, for them it's hard not to imagine not fussing over every project and detail, right? It gives them a sense. It's the thing that they feel like they can control, and it sort of arrests this feeling of control back when it's actually a cycling down and undermines the organizational performance. It just makes them feel better, right? So rather than letting those things you cannot do well overwhelm you, it's about identifying your strengths and using them to lead your team effectively.
Okay, so we focused on our strengths. Probably the next one to sort of go on to is bolster your decision-making skills. Mm. You know, look, as a leader, anxiety can sometimes, as I've mentioned, impair your judgment, cause us to focus on the wrong things and inevitably make poor decisions. Now, what good leaders do is take counsel from the right people by trying to surround themselves with what I would say a group of trusted advisors or allies that may cause them to refocus and see things just from a different perspective. Mm. I think that, you know, the key here is to develop a peer group of trusted leaders that can offer insight and clarity to your decisions before you make them and avoid you making the wrong decision.
Mm, yeah, I like that. I mean, no matter how well you plan sometimes, you're not going to get it right all of the time, right?
That's correct.
I know that's hard for you to hear, Adam, but it's not right all of the time.
I'm in therapy.
Okay. I mean, as leaders, it's important that when we make mistakes, we accept them graciously and we learn from those experiences. It's easy to say, it's really hard to do.
It is.
And it's okay that it's hard. It's just, it's really inconvenient, but these are the things that are going to make you stronger. They'll make you a leader who improves every day by properly dealing with vulnerability and allowing others also to make mistakes and be vulnerable as well. I think that's an important piece. You know, if you don't accept the vulnerability and the mistakes of others, you're also unlikely to accept your own and see your own, and it sort of creates this negative cycle, this downward spiral, and doesn't help anyone and definitely doesn't help your anxiety and definitely will not help the anxiety of your team.
Well, speaking of gracious, maybe I should take the next one, hey Phil? Another one to keep in mind as a leader is to always practice positive communication. I know we've covered this many times, but I honestly can't, you know, emphasize this one enough. You know, they say misery loves company. If you're feeling anxious and fearful and it is starting to show up in how you speak and communicate, it can be contagious and impact your team, the wider business, and undermine your capacity to lead in some cases.
Mm.
I'm not saying that you know, should push down, as you mentioned, your anxieties and fears. It's just understanding when to share them in a way that can actually inspire your team.
Mm.
Amy Cuddy, a social psychologist, said, "Nothing establishes trust more effectively than the emotional connection fostered through empathy and shared humanity. This is why being open about your own anxiety can be so powerful."
Yeah, and the way that you do that, for instance, is by saying, you know, articulating it. So I can say, Adam, you know, this podcast, I'm feeling a bit anxious about it. I'm not quite sure what I'm doing, but I'm really excited that the potential of the communication that's coming out there, right? So instantly I've acknowledged it, but I'm phrasing it in a way that tells me about how I'm excited about it, how much anticipation there is. You know, I'm reframing some of those negative emotions that is often associated with anxiety as anticipation. You know, are you nervous, or are you full of anticipation? You know, and this is a really nice way of being able to be honest with people without it becoming a negative, overwhelming thing, but give it a positive emotional forward momentum through the language that you use.
Yeah.
And I think that is really, really important, because emotions are contagious.
Yep.
And you need to remember that emotional contagion is there. Mm-hmm. So I think finally, and sort of as we start to wrap up, I think it's really important that all of us find better ways to beat anxiety in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
This is all a part of mental health. It's like everyone has physical health, and the more you exercise, you can be better. No matter where you are, you can be physically healthier than you are.
Mm-hmm.
You can be mentally healthier irrespective of where you are. You don't have to be starting from a place of deficiency to be better.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone can find better ways to manage anxiety in their life. It's not just about practicing self-care. It's about finding ways to channel your energy into more effective outlets and focus on more important things. You know, don't be one of those leaders that holds the stress in, that tries to hold the weight of the world and ruminate night and night and almost celebrates the fact that they're not sleeping well, you know. You got to exercise, you know, go get a massage, take some of those mindfulness walks, do whatever it makes you feel good and manage your anxiety. It'll be different for different people, right? You've got to find how you do it and what's right for you. Whether you're a leader or a manager, whether you're climbing the corporate ladder, your health and your mental health is such an important thing to take care of.
Mm. So there you have it, folks. Hopefully some of the tips and topics we've discussed here today will help you manage your own fear and anxiety and give you the strategies for that long-term success and sustainability as a leader.
Yep, and I think to wrap it all up, Lolly Daskal wrote in The Leadership Gap, I think really does sum it up best with what she says. She says, anxiety makes leadership interesting, but managing anxiety makes leadership meaningful for you and for those you lead. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Turnaround Mindset Podcast. If you liked what you heard today, please head over to iTunes, Google, or Spotify, hit subscribe, and share the podcast with someone you think would benefit from it. Don't forget to leave a 5-star rating. To download this episode and access other relevant content, please visit our website, www.theturnaroundmindset.com. Join us next week for another Turnaround Mindset episode, and remember, the only way it gets better for you is when you get better.